Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Left on Red. Very exciting this week. We've got a little collaboration going. We are back with another episode quite soon after the last one, and we're here with Laith from the Gooner, and we're getting going.
Yeah, thanks for having us on your podcast, guys. We're back with Gooner Fanzine TV with a little association this year. We're gonna got a couple of things going on that was gonna be of interest to you, hopefully. We're gonna talk about obviously Arsenal Watford, aren't we? So yeah. Shoot with that and we'll have a chat.
Sweet. So I wasn't very happy today.
What, overall?
Overall. I was saying to my dad on the way to the game that the atmosphere felt very different. It felt like things had properly changed. Like, there wasn't the same tension. It was like everyone was there for a good day out.
Sunday 2 p.m. as well, though.
Yes. But, you know, I think people were all right about that. And then it felt good going into the ground. And then, but quite quickly, it sort of seemed to change a little bit.
I don't think it was a negative performance. I thought there were some good bits. But I also think that the fact that we should have won 4-0, I keep on banging on about it, really...
Yeah, I don't know where you've come up with this.
Well, no, I've not come up with it. Aubameyang's, you know, the culprit for three goals that we should have buried. So you've got the Saka goal, which was given offside because Aubameyang has a bad touch, which leads to the ball going into Saka's pathway.
Yeah.
And then the offside rule where you have to be offside by two players when the goalkeeper's involved was the reason he was offside. You've got the missed penalty and Odegaard's goal, which was on the line, it was going in, he's decided to touch it from an offside position as the ball was on the line. So, on most other days, we would have won 4-0.
Yeah.
So I think, if there's any negativity, it's more so that we didn't win 4-0 than... The performance wasn't at its best, but it wasn't terrible.
No, it wasn't awful. I thought after that penalty miss, the atmosphere sort of really seems to change. I don't know whether you got a picture of that more from the media section, like.
Yeah, it was one of those games where you just look back and you think, yeah, I'm glad we got the win, and performance was almost secondary, really. But we just made it really difficult for ourselves. You should never miss a penalty. It's so frustrating when that happens. We obviously had Saka's goal that was disallowed prior to that as well. There was chances that we should have put away and could have put away, and as you said about Aubameyang as well, with if he'd have just left the ball. And I suppose you could argue that's a striker's instinct to do that with Odegaard's shot, but at the same time, it was so frustrating to see that as well. And I used to watch Arsenal Watford in the 80s, and there was a whole raft of games where Watford would always beat us. So I never think that beating Watford is an easy thing to do, really.
No, I mean, especially with all the Troy Deeney shithousery in recent years.
There's no love lost between the two teams.
Absolutely. It's interesting as well, because I covered Watford-Liverpool a couple of weeks ago, and that was Ranieri's first game. And that first 45 minutes, they were dreadful, absolutely dreadful.
Awful.
They played 4-5-1, and it was they were all over the place.
They played 4-5-1 today as well, by the way.
I thought it was more 4-1-4-1, because Saka in the middle, and he nailed it in terms of Party not being there, and he bossed the midfield.
He was in the middle, but they had two midfielders and two wingers, and then when they countered, the wingers would go high, and it was a free midfield. It's very similar.
If you'd have seen how badly they played,
it was awful against them.
So bad,
and it was completely different. I thought, but
quite good at Everton.
Yeah, 5-2, Josh King, that chance at the end as well with Ben White and Ramsdale, the little cock up there. Ramsdale's, he's obviously got his feet on the ground, he's a big character, so he's going to do really well for England, he's going to play in the international break, hopefully, but he's got to be careful with stuff like that, because that could have cost us.
Yeah.
Josh King's on fire, like you say, that 5-2, he was brilliant that day.
With that misunderstanding between White and Ramsdale, my mind went straight to the Birmingham Cup Final in 2011.
And I was saying to my dad, Hull as well, do you remember when Fabianski came rushing out of his goal? Aluko had one cleared off the line by Gibbs in extra time.
That was that game again.
We've had quite a few of them.
I've almost removed them from my mind because it's too painful, basically. And that could have been another one today.
I'm sure we'll touch on it, but Josh King, I think, was one of the leaders of their continuous diving and rolling around. Him and Gabriel went into a lot of 50-50s, and he would go down. He was begging the ref. I was keeping my eye on him a little bit. I'm sure we'll go into it. There are numerous Watford players playing their games today, which really frustrated me.
Yeah, I mean, from where I was sitting, I thought there was a good duel between Gabriel and Ismail Assar. And if you remember, he was at Rennes. I remember doing a game at Rennes. I remember driving over there to France to cover the Europa League game a couple of years back, and he scored. They beat us 3-1 over there. We had an absolute stormer. Maitland-Niles played really well in the second leg, beating 3-0. But I've always sort of kept tabs on him. He's done all right for Watford, nothing too special, but Gabriel had him in his pocket.
Was the away leg the one where Aubameyang's whipped out the Black Panther mask?
No, that was the home leg.
That's the home leg, yeah.
And then we beat him 3-0.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just, I was saying to my brother as well after the game that it's one of those sort of games where the whole week you're looking at sort of other results, and we were assuming that West Ham would lose to Liverpool, which they didn't. But you're looking at that and you're thinking, oh, if we win, we're level on points, we're top four, we're 6 points off the top, we're this and that.
Yeah.
And I remember so many games like that in the past where we've looked at them and been like, oh, if we win this, we go 5 points clear. And you just end up going and lose.
Yeah.
We end up going
when it,
and losing.
When it felt like there was sort of an eeriness after Aubameyang missed his penalty,
yeah.
And my mum said to me, we're going to draw this game 1-1. She said she got a feeling, and I had it as well, it was kind of, you've missed so many clear-cut, like, high XG chances. I know we don't like XG and whatnot, but 9 out of 10 times, Lathie does not like XG. Let's not get onto it, lads.
Yeah. We're allowed to swear.
You wankers. Yeah.
No, but you know what I mean.
You play Acne Martins on a Sunday morning, you're not going to go out there centre forward. We're expected to score 2
but
goals.
I'm there analysing expected goals, mate. That's my tactic on Sunday league.
But you get what I mean. 9 out of 10 times, we would have scored those 3 goals, which we should have scored today.
Should have, I suppose. But yeah,
that's what I mean. Though. It builds into that sense of, oh, it might just not be our day, and Watford might hit us on the counter or score a set piece or something.
Yeah.
So there was that kind of feeling, and then the relief in Smith Rowe's celebration, and then the chance started coming along, and it was a nice little last 20 minutes. We had to dig in a little bit, but.
It was a nice last 20 minutes.
Okay, it was a nice 5 minutes of singing afterwards.
A nice 5 minutes.
I mean, after the absolutely horrendous August we had, I've just literally started looking at the league table again.
Yeah.
Like you say, it's so weird to see where.
Having been 20th on 0 points, scored 0 goals.
So now be fifth, 2 points off top four, 6 points off first.
Yeah, and I'm always going to stop
doing
the permutations.
We're 2 points behind Liverpool.
That's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, how does that work?
It doesn't. I mean, it does. But it's just mental when you consider, like, on the way up to Burnley, like 17th or something in the league
with three
points or something.
Well, I think the truth's going to come out in the next couple of weeks, isn't it? After the international break, when we will go up to Anfield and then...
Yeah.
And Old Trafford.
And Old Trafford as well.
But, I mean, we've been saying that after every game. Okay, Spurs is a test, Leicester's a test. Yeah. And we keep on passing them. So if we, you know, drop points away at Anfield, I don't think we should go, oh...
Yeah, but if the wheels come off and they tonk us like 4-5-1 as they have done recently.
Okay, but if we lose 1-0, 2-1 or draw or something like that, and the performance is decent, then
I don't know.
It's it's the Christmas period that always tests a team like this.
Wow.
Because we've got Liverpool, then Newcastle, and then you've got United on a Thursday, Everton on a Monday.
It's 3 days difference
between
those games.
But I suppose we haven't got Europe, so it's not as crazy as it could be. But and we've always just had a really bad November, haven't we?
Yeah, November, I was looking, it's the month where we average the lowest amount of points.
Yeah,
I think we average like 1.2 points a game in November.
Yeah,
so even going back to the days where we were like first in the league until Christmas or something, and it was starting to go downhill in November. Just before we move on to our sort of tactics section, I was wondering if we could get Leif's sort of analysis of what his matchday experience is generally. It doesn't have to be even this game, from where you sit and the role that you do in matches and stuff like that.
Blimey, I mean, it depends which decade you're talking about. If it was the 80s and 90s, it was literally be down the pub for 4 hours before kickoff, make kickoff just, you know, after the first down the whistle, and stagger through a game.
Yeah.
Whether it's on the terraces, in the stands. But nowadays, obviously, I'm fortunate enough to be a journalist, and I cover a lot of games in the press box, and I know how lucky I am.
Can we just say me and Lola are very grateful for, like, the connections and the tickets and the stuff that you're doing with us.
Has been the main reason that the 38 game season has stayed on.
Oh no, well, you can't watch a team for 40 years and not meet a few people and get a few contacts.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been great. It's given me a new lease of life, giving you guys lifts to away games and stuff. And
you get more people in the Goonamobile.
It's not just you
and your Oasis.
But I mean, it's all good fun. I live and breathe Arsenal. When I'm in the press box, I try and be as neutral as possible while sort of, you know...
Especially in the away ends. In the away stadiums.
Home away, it doesn't really matter, but you have to be as neutral as you can in the press box. But at the same time, you are writing for your readers. And prior to kickoff, even these days, I'm actually selling the Guna outside in the arches on Hornsey Road.
Yeah,
so,
if you ever hear anyone go, get your Guna, that'd be
Lazy. Yeah, that'd be me. So thank you very much. I mean, absolutely humbling, the amount of goodwill that we get from everyone that comes along and buys a copy as well. It's absolutely astounding. So obviously, Lowe writes for us, and you're going to be writing in print as well.
Yeah.
More long may it continue, basically. But yeah, it's all good fun. That's the thing, Arsenal's a family, it's a community there. There's a lot of really loyal Gooners, whether they're young, old, you know, whatever. It's it's in the blood, basically. And yeah, long may it continue.
Yeah, I was going to say sort of something that that you've had over the last couple of years that me and Harry haven't have. I mean, obviously, you've been there for a lot more games than us, but you were there throughout those lockdown games, and I was wondering what your sort of like, what your perspective of that was, because it must have felt really weird.
Yeah, very good question. Yeah, I probably did about 60, 65 games during the whole lockdown when there was no fans there. And what's the old phrase? Football without fans is nothing. That's what it felt like. It just felt like glorified training sessions, all of them.
Because I mean, suppose you get a bit of a feel of it off TV, you know, if it's on Sky and you got the Premier League logo there, you sort of think, oh, this is a Premier League game. Whereas if you're actually there and there's actually no one around.
It's like going down the park and watching a football match, I suppose. Obviously, much higher level, but that sense that you're just on a pitch and you can hear nothing, just the players and the coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the best things about it. The fact you could hear the coaching staff talk and then issue instructions and hear the sort of conversations that were going on. But apart from that, there was no positives at all. It was just glorified training sessions.
I think one thing that ties into sort of football is nothing without the fans is the fact that the tactical side of the match was, I think, over exacerbated in that period, and there was a lack of intensity and pressing and tackling because I think coaches thought, we don't have the fans getting on our backs, so if we don't worry about that so much, we can really, really try and drill into our players what we want out of them. Yeah. But the game lost a little bit of passion and fight within that.
Yeah. Well, because I was saying to you actually when I thought Odegaard didn't have a great game when we played at home to Spurs, and I was saying to you that he might have got quite a different picture of the North London derby
from his North London derby debut.
He's played in one with no fans, and the passion and the intensity and the aggression just isn't there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just, even in the simple things like a throw-in, if you take the throw-in down the corner near the away fans or in a sort of hostile home stadium, you're going to get sick, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Just picking them up and throwing the balls. Training says there's so many little things that basically denuded the fact that it wasn't a proper match day experience. It wasn't that, as you said, the intensity was missing, basically. And it's great to have fans back because it really does let the players, just gives them a bit of a kick up the backside, really, in terms of that intensity. It's great to see.
And just to touch on the fan base, I think we're starting to really build a good connection with Arteta and the squad that we have at the moment. I think the new players have injected a lease of life into the connectivity between fans and players. I think Ramsdale and Ben White have really sort of charged the team to come towards us at the end of matches, and Ramsdale gives a fist bump and there's a lot of clapping and singing, especially in the away end. Yeah. And it feels like there's a lot more emotion on the players' behalf. They all seem to care so much more this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see there is a bond there. And honestly, fans have been brilliant this season in terms of getting behind their team. I think Arteta has had a bit of a pass in terms of last season, losing 10, 11 games, what he was in the league.
Yeah.
If that had happened in front of fans last season, I'm not sure he'd have been there.
Yeah.
Here still now,
but
basically.
Maybe we'll be thanking the heavens for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we lift the trophy.
Yeah, let's hope so. But I think he did get away with it last season.
Yeah.
Which is great because now everyone's unified, there's a community, there's a bond there.
And also, he's been given time to develop a team that now is starting to look quite proper.
It's so moulded to him and his tactics as well, though. Yeah. So we need to stick with him because A, he's doing a good job. B, if you were to change, you'd have to rip the squad up again.
Yeah. I mean, that's why that Man City game hurt so much. You know, we were sort of talking about it on the way back and stuff. And it just felt like there was nothing going on. It felt like we'd lost the changing room. The players weren't even given enough effort.
But me and Harry were talking about this. And you look at the team we played there. It's like just completely different.
It's a completely different
11. We had a back 5 of Chambers,
Cedric and...
I suppose we're down to 10 men. But the fact that I just felt like they weren't putting the effort in. Maybe it was being hypercritical, I don't know.
Yeah.
And Man City are a great side. But that was the lowest point in my whole, sort of watching Arsenal and Arteta. And the way they've rallied since then deserves absolute credit.
Unbeaten since we started the podcast, so.
We haven't lost since.
Is that right? Brilliant.
We started after Norwich and we haven't lost since.
Yeah,
going to have to keep it up.
What's that, 10 games unbeaten, 6 out of 8 in the league, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Not too bad.
Good work.
Okay, so Lathie's left us now. He's left us to do the rest of our Left on Red podcast, and we've got Harry now with his tactical section for the day. Harry, anything to delve into from today?
There is something to delve into.
I know they weren't playing a three back. You weren't.
So we saw perhaps a slight downgrade of performance, in your opinion?
I don't know. I know you're happy when teams play three backs and you get to do your tactical analysis on it.
I am, but I'm also happy today. We've got stuff to talk about. So
okay.
I think we should begin with what Watford did, because I think it will tie in nicely to what I'm going to discuss in relation to what we did. So Watford played a 4-5-1. Some people will say 4-1-4-1. I think it was a 4-4-1. It's essentially the same thing because it's three midfielders, two wide players. When they sat in a 4-5-1 and they countered in a 4-3-3. So the key was their two wide players. They would look for counter-attacks down the wings and then it would become three in midfield.
Yeah.
But when they sat with a block of four and a block of five and then Josh King just chasing our centre-backs. So their midfield three in that 4-5-1 or the 4-1-4-1, the holder was Sissoko and they had 2 8s. Mm. So those three players were quite wide. The two players higher up were quite wide. So I think that was quite important. I think Arteta had analysed that in Ranieri's previous two games. And that will be apparent when we discuss what Arsenal did. So on paper, it was a 4-4-2 from us. But that was only prevalent when we were pressing. It was only a 4-4-2 in a pressing system. It wasn't when we were playing out. When we were playing out, we played out in a 4-3-3. It was a wide 4-3-3 with two really wide number eights. So Ainsley Maitland-Niles was a left number eight. Lacazette would drop from being a second striker to a right number eight. He wasn't dropping into 10. He was really wide and right.
I was going to say something that I picked up on, well, both me and my brother picked up on, was Lacazette was almost operating the same space as Saka when our defence had the ball.
Yeah. And he was just inside of Saka, and
so you think that was the 4-4-4?
It was a wide 4-3-3. So the 2 8s were really wide.
4-4-3-3.
Yes, yeah. And I think the reason Mikel asked Ainsley to shift from a double pivot to the left eight and Lacazette go in, and both of them to be really wide, was because in Watford's 4-5-1, their 2 8s were quite wide.
Yeah.
So I think by doing that, it caused confusion in Watford's block of five in front of their defence. And he was hoping to then combine down the wings or little through balls over the top, which we saw a few times for Aubameyang, etc.
Well, I thought that maybe the plan was for those sort of wide number eights to pick the ball up a bit more than they were doing and link up with the wingers inside.
I agree with that because I think they didn't. I think actually Lacazette did. I think he was superb. He created lots.
I didn't think he had a great game today.
I disagree. I think that if you were to watch back everything he did, he linked up really well with Saka, who I thought had a really good game, one of his best games of the season. Mm. But I think the idea was to rotate and confuse their midfield by rotating between fullback, winger and number eight. On the right side, it's confusing because it was Lacazette as a striker dropping in to be a wide number eight.
Yeah.
And I thought that at times, Lacazette would then go onto the right wing and Saka would come in and play in the inside right space, which created confusion and rotation. I thought they linked up well and a number of chances we created in the first half came through that. And I thought on the left side, you saw Ainsley Maitland-Niles, who was the wide left eight, go to left back, Nuno go to left wing, and Smith Rowe come inside to the left eight. And actually, I was critical in the first half of Smith Rowe. I thought he was pretty average, a bit isolated, and that he didn't come inside enough, which he usually does off the left, which he should have done. That was the game plan.
And he wasn't really doing as much as his sort of picking up the ball and driving with it, which
exactly.
I think
he did it once or twice, and it looked like it needed it. And when you started to pick up central areas, we looked more threatening and essentially we scored a goal through him being just inside in the left channel.
Yeah.
So that was, I think, a result of Arteta analysing how Watford played.
Yeah.
But I think we lacked a little bit of central penetration in the offensive area. I thought our central sort of hub of the team was Lokonga, who was playing as a six, single pivot. I thought he actually received the ball and did all the fundamentals really well, receiving off the back too.
But I think we saw sort of what Arteta, I think he was saying it in an interview this week or maybe the week before, just about how Partey, not only is he sort of a vital cog of the team, he also makes players around him play better.
Yeah, he does.
And I think that's probably what we were missing a bit of today.
I agree. I think linking as the number six, Lokonga was really good, but the distribution of pass, the dropping of the shoulder, you can see that Partey's...
He's not got the same range, has he?
He's not got the same range of pass, but not I think yet. He's as comfortable as Partey receiving the ball in tight areas as a number six in between the lines and just making simple passes from there onwards.
Yeah.
And then from that 4-3-3 when we were building with the ball, with the wide number eights, we then settled into a 2-3-5 when we were hubbed in their half, so which is different from having the three centre-backs. So it was two centre-backs and then Ainsley and Tomiyasu were wide and then Lokonga was in the middle. And then you had Tavares, Smith-Rowe, Aubameyang, Lacazette, Saka, or sometimes Saka inside and Lacazette on the widest right side of the pitch, which is a bit strange, yeah. but it seemed to work getting Saka in dangerous areas.
Okay.
So that was good. That was all fine. I don't think we created enough. And
no,
I think
we
that,
really didn't.
I think that we missed a little bit of central creation, which would have worked with this system if our number nine could hold the ball up and link play up.
Yeah, which we've been through many a time.
We don't need to talk about that anymore. We'll get into Aubameyang's performance in the player ratings because it's one of the worst performances I've seen in an Arsenal shirt.
I was going to say that I thought it was one of those games that you think maybe if that Saka goal's allowed, or you know, if Aubameyang puts it in from where he made that poor touch, it's one of those games that then just we could have kicked on.
Well, like we would have won. We would have won that game 4-0 if Aubameyang hadn't missed or been culpable in three very, very obvious goal scoring opportunities.
But do you know what I mean? Like an early goal sort of changes the landscape of the game. It creates more space and it makes the crowd less nervy, and you know.
Sure. Yeah. And then in the second half, there was a slight change when we built out. It wasn't so much of a wide 4-3-3. He asked Ainsley to be more of a double pivot with Lokonga, which I think saw us centrally dictate the play a little bit more when we were searching for the goal. Lacazette was still doing the same thing, dropping into that sort of right number 8, number 10 space, but you wouldn't have that as high up on the left, which then allowed Smith-Rowe to come in. So I thought it was a good tweak.
Lacazette does that so well, where he just can pick the ball up, and it's sort of, I guess, underrated in a sense in the way that he can beat a man.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not with sort of flair and skill, but with the way he uses his body and how he can sort of maneuver the ball through that.
With his touch.
Yeah.
Players don't anticipate somebody having such good first touch.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then you dive in a little bit, but the touch is so good that they're around you.
Yeah.
I thought that the goal that Saka should have scored, or scored, that Aubameyang should have scored, should I say, had he not had a really bad touch, if he just finished it first time, I thought that goal, the combination play between Maitland-Niles and Lacazette was just delightful. Creative.
Do you think Lacazette meant to chip that into Aubameyang, or do you think
I've seen it back. He found Aubameyang's path.
Right, okay.
It was beautiful. It was really nice. Moving into the second half, which we did with the conversation about the midfield dynamic changing just a tad, I was really frustrated by the fact that Lacazette came off and Odegaard came on. It wasn't a personnel thing, it wasn't a tactical thing. It tactically makes sense to change to a 4-2-3-1 with half an hour to go, just to keep the ball a little bit more, with more rhythm. But it's frustrating me that
did
it's Aubameyang.
Did Odegaard come on before the goal was scored?
He came on after the goal was scored.
After. Yeah, because I was going to say, sort of once we got that first goal, I thought, you know, okay, we might control the game a bit more. It didn't turn out that way. But in the way it turned out, it would have been so much more, what's the word, sort of beneficial to us.
Sure.
To have Lacazette up there instead of Aubameyang, someone that can hold it up and play someone off it. Because Aubameyang quite often, like Ramsdale was picking him out every time with the goal kicks.
Yeah.
Aubameyang's touch isn't good enough. And if it was good enough, on the rare occasion, he then can't find or hold the ball up.
If we had Lacazette playing where Aubameyang played, or Aubameyang could do the fundamentals of football, control, pass, have some vision, we would be a level above as a team, because we'd suddenly have link-up play and a zone of the pitch that is an additional force for the other team to worry about. We know that it's a part of the way we play, but we don't have the cog to do it. Well, we do. It's Lacazette. But I think it's a political thing, if I'm honest, because they've backed Aubameyang with the big contract. Lacazette's contract is running down. They want to create this sort of facade that Aubameyang's amazing, that we love him, and that we should want him to be our main striker, and that Lacazette keeps on coming off with 20 minutes to go, and there's a little bit of disconnect there because he wants to go, and they'll paint this picture so that the fan base won't be too upset when Lacazette goes. Mm. But actually, everybody should be absolutely, I don't know, everybody should be really, really frustrated and distraught about it, because this guy is so essential to everything we're doing.
Yeah.
And he's so good at holding the ball up, linking play, beating a man. He's got the best conversion rate in the Premier League from last season. I don't understand where any criticism comes in with Lacazette.
I suppose there is a bit of an argument in terms of taking Lacazette off, in terms of the pressing aspect of our performance and Odegaard, but also the fitness level, because I think Aubameyang is...
Well, Aubameyang's faster and more agile.
Yeah.
And we know the aspect of the game that he does better than Lacazette, which is running and beyond. And
yeah.
and pressing. I wouldn't say Lacazette's a bad presser, but Aubameyang...
He doesn't do it as
when Aubameyang puts in the effort, he can be an exceptional presser.
Yeah.
But I think that's a bit of a mess because I think it's a political decision Mikel's making rather than a...
Yeah.
But it is a tactical decision. It's just tweaking it from a 4-4-2 on paper to a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
However, I'm starting to get frustrated behind part of the reasoning with that comes with it.
And I suppose, you know, it's all speculation, but that's all we can do from the positions that we're in.
Should we quickly touch on Watford and cheating?
Oh, I hated them. I hated them.
Disgraceful, wasn't it?
Just the diving. And also, I mean, there were sort of a lot of little fouls that they were doing all over the pitch that teams do. But Watford were doing it in a way that they were putting the studs down the
leaving
back
the
of
foot
players' legs. And you could see the players were hurt after those challenges because they were a bit naughty.
And it was just sort of a typical old school Italian diving where you go down, wait for the other team to kick the ball out and then get straight back up to waste time when you're the underdog.
Yeah.
And good riddance on them that we scored a goal from doing that. And thank you to Lacazette for keeping the ball and sustaining the attack.
Yeah, I thought he was well within his right to do that.
Absolutely. Lawfully and sort of, I don't know, ethically, whatever.
Yeah.
Because they cheated. Their player went down. As soon as the ball was kicked out by Danny Rose, he got up. All the Arsenal fans booed, rightfully so.
And I think Danny Rose probably would have cleared it into touch anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the only difference was is that he passed it out instead of lumping it out, as he probably would have done.
Yeah,
but,
and Ranieri's already got into an argument with Arteta, and I'm sure that social media will call us cheats and stuff like that because of the principle of the matter. But actually, if you really look into it, the amount of times Watford went down with that tactic to get back up as soon as play resumed, or sorry, play the ball went out of play, just to waste time.
Yeah.
We did exactly the right thing. There's no way we should give the ball back when somebody's just doing it to waste time against stuff. It's cheating.
Yeah.
Let's dive into player ratings. I'll be asking Lowell this week. We're going to do our top three players, bottom three players, opposition's best player. We'll obviously chat about Mikel. And this week we're going to include the ref because I think he had a bit of a shaky
performance, a slight shocker.
Yeah. So start with the low. Who are our bottom three players from third worst to worst?
Okay. Third worst, I will go for.
I'm not sure there were three disastrous performances.
I think there was one disastrous performance. Maybe I go. Do you know what? I'm just gonna go. There was the disastrous performance was from Aubameyang. Couldn't do anything right today. Performance-wise,
holding up the ball, linking play.
His touch.
Touch, which was the reason that we didn't get the first goal from Saka.
It all went wrong.
Missed a penalty, decided to be selfish and nicked a goal on the line from Odegaard.
Yeah, it all went wrong for him. And, you know, I think I'd give him a 2 or 3 out of 10.
I don't even know whether you get the 2 from him. I mean,
just for being there.
Just for wearing the armband, maybe. Yeah. I think just surely Arteta's got to drop him and stop bothering with
it. No, I don't think he'll drop him.
I don't think he will, but surely he should.
Oh, I don't know. It was a really bad off day for him. But, you know, we've seen sort of not as much as we should, but we've seen that Aubameyang can have a really, really big influence on that team, like at home to Aston Villa, like at home to Tottenham.
I'm not convinced. Anyway, let's go into your top three.
My top three, I'd go third, I'd go Ben White. I thought he had a really, really good game.
I agree. Made a really good block.
Anticipation again, as we've always touched on. Made a really good block at the end.
Driving out nicely.
Driving out and is playing out from the back. Was really good. So I think I'd give him a 7 out of 10.
Sure.
Second, I would go for Nuno. I thought Nuno was really, really good against Leigh.
I think he had multiple bad first touches, which essentially got their player a red card in the end. I mean, it wasn't a foul. He took
but
a
it's just, I just love his energy and how quick
so
he is and how quick he covers. And he's really good one-on-one defending. And I thought he really didn't get caught out by Ismail Assar, which I was quite worried about before the game. So I think I'd put him as my second best.
Okay.
And then man the match I'd give to Maitland-Niles.
Okay, so I agree with Ben White 3. I would have Bukayo Saka number 2. I thought he was exceptional today. He had Danny Rose on toast.
Yeah, he should, to be fair.
As he should, but he did. And he was looking threatening. And, you know, he should have had a goal to his name today. Really, really good performance, I thought. One of his best this season.
Okay.
And then I think I agree with Ainsley number 1. I thought just the composure, the technical ability to change direction.
And the sort of the mental strength to come back into the team after everything that happened in the summer and also being on the bench for a lot of the season and being able to come into that midfield and just really play really
well. Not looking out of place at all.
No.
not as if we didn't even miss Partey or Lokonga being where Ainsley was.
Yeah, so I think I'd give him a 9 out of 10 and maybe Nuno an 8. 7.5 for Nuno.
Okay, sure. Okay, so opposition's player of the match. Was there one? Foster?
Yeah, to be fair, probably Foster.
Made a few saves.
Made a few really good saves. Pen save, you know, it was a poor pen, but made a really good save from a corner and then from a Lokonga shot as well.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, probably Ben Foster.
Mikel today?
Mikel today, I'd give a 7. I thought maybe there was something to be said for maybe that substitution with Odegaard coming on for Aubameyang.
For me, it wasn't Lacazette. Odegaard coming on, it was Lacazette coming off.
But also, I think maybe there could have been a slight system tweak at halftime, given the way the game was going.
Sure, I agree. And then finally, let's end on the ref.
Shocker. Shocker. I saw that Watford made 19 fouls, had 2 bookings. Arsenal made 6 fouls, had 2 bookings. Like, how does that work?
By half time.
Yeah.
It's just laughable, isn't it?
Like,
anyway. I mean, I was saying to you earlier, I think that actually some of his first decisions, giving us yellow cards or free kick to Watford, were correct.
Our two yellow cards were fine. I'm not annoyed about
that. Yeah, but I think the Arsenal fans got onto him for that. As all fans do.
But then we also had 2 more yellow cards in the second half, which were just disgraceful.
No, of course, but I'm saying, I think after that, after the Arsenal fans getting onto the refs back,
he then
sort of crumbled and started giving everything as yellows for both teams that just weren't yellows.
And how did Danny Rose not get a booking?
I know. That's what I mean. He kept on fouling Saka.
Yeah. Anyway.
So in this week's instalment of Whatever Happened To, we're going to be talking about Igor Stepanov. So he's not as ancient as most of the players in the matches that we discuss in this section.
No.
But there's a funny story and there's a bit of sort of insight that not many people know about that we've been told by Lathy.
Yeah, it was a suggestion from Lath and Serge, so thanks to them for
thanks
that.
To those guys. I think in commemoration of... Not in commemoration, that's a past tense, isn't it?
Yeah.
In celebration of our partnership with the Gunner fanzine... Yeah. We think it's only right that they have a little shout in this section this week.
Mm.
So Igor Stepanov, he signed for Arsenal in 2000. We needed a new defender. I think he could play centre-back and right-back. He was Latvian, by the way. Tony Adams had an injury, so Arsene Wenger was on the look for good young talent, and he'd done some good stuff. I think he won 5 or 6 Latvian first divisions,
right.
And he was only young. So he brought him on trial. And the sort of funny story that Lathy was telling us earlier was that Ray Parlour told them down the pub one time that he was so bad in Arsenal training, making rash tackles, bad passes, loose touches, that the Arsenal team decided to take the mick out of him. Every time he did something bad, they would clap him to make him think that he was doing really well. And apparently Dennis was involved in this. And
Bergkamp, Lee Dixon, all, players like that.
They were all taking the piss and it was really funny. But Wenger didn't realise. I don't know how he's not realised, because he must have been watching the sessions.
He's a clever man as
he's
well.
Maybe he wasn't watching it. Maybe he just liked the enthusiasm from the team. He didn't realise it was a joke and he thought for team bonding he should sign him. But Wenger took the clapping quite literally and ended up signing the geezer. He bought him for £1.35 million and he started the season all right. He scored in the League Cup. He got his way into the team.
Yeah.
Played in a few matches in Tony Adams' place until Man United away in a crucial game on course for the Premiership title. We got trounced 6-1. He had an absolute shocker. And he didn't play for the rest of the season. Now, he got himself back into the team for a few games. I think for 5 appearances in the following season. Which usually wouldn't be enough to win a Premier League winner's medals title.
Which usually wouldn't be enough to get a Premier League winner's medal.
There we go. Not title, medal.
No, medal. Nice.
But it was because on the final game of the season at Old Trafford, he was on the bench.
Okay.
So he was there for the ceremony, so they gave him one. So he's technically a Premiership winner. 01-02.
Oh, okay. Right.
And he went on to win the cup with us in 01-02 and in 02-03. So he's won 3 big trophies with us, but not really been involved. And he was a bit of a laughing stock. However, he was the Latvian player of the season in 2005.
What was his competition like?
I don't know. I don't know any players from Latvia.
Yeah, I think he's only one of 5 Latvian players to play in the Premier League.
Yeah, but I think it's quite a nice story because I think this story is a bit more well-known. I think Ray Parlour told it actually publicly, this one, about Kolo Touré. Arsene Wenger loved doing trials with these defenders back in the early 2000s, and Kolo Touré was another one. And I think there must be something about a player's spirit which Arsene Wenger signed people on, because Kolo Touré has gone studs into Arsene Wenger a fair few times in his first few training sessions, and he signed him based off that passion. Most managers might have wanted to never see that player again after taking him out.
But Arsene, there's
something about Arsene and signing defenders based off bad trials that was sort of prominent.
Kolo Touré worked out a bit better than
he was good. He was crucial in the Invincibles title, wasn't he?
Yeah. Talking of Arsene, I'm actually going to a charity event with him tomorrow.
Are you?
Well, I'm going with my dad, but David Dean's interviewing Arsene.
Is this to see the new documentary?
No, it's just a charity thing.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. I'm a bit jealous. Can't wait for the documentary to come out, by the way.
Yeah, it's meant to be really good. Okay, so it is 6-4 to Harry in the quiz stakes, and this is the last one before we go off on our international break. I mean, we're not going anywhere, but...
No, we'll be right here.
But yeah, so it's the last quiz of this little section. Yeah, so let's get going. So the first one... Watford beat Arsenal in the FA Cup quarterfinal a few years ago.
What year?
2016.
No, I thought that was a question. What year?
Oh, no, it was 2016. So, what was the score?
Yeah.
And who scored Arsenal's goal?
Yeah, got it. Next.
Oh, fuck.
I was there, I remember this game.
Okay, given that we've got Anfield next... Who were the two debut scorers when Arsenal won 2-0 at Anfield in 2012? Debut scorers and assisters, actually.
They both scored and assisted.
They both scored and assisted each other, yeah.
I know one, and then there's a choice between two. See, I have a nightmare that I'm going to miss Podolski out again after the Tottenham question a few episodes ago.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it was Giroud. I know Santi scored one. Oh, was it Giroud or Podolski?
Going to push you for an answer now.
I've missed out Podolski once. Why don't I miss him out again?
Okay. And last one, given that Aubameyang missed his penalty today. Name three... So there are five Arsenal players who have missed their only Arsenal competitive Arsenal penalty, not including shootouts. Can you name three of them?
It's a massive stitch up. Oh, in penalty shootouts?
No, not in penalty shootouts. They're only...
In their Arsenal careers?
Yeah. They only took one penalty in their Arsenal careers.
It's a shocking question from you.
I thought it was quite good.
No, it's a good question in the sense that it's impossible for me to think of. I'm going to go with some random names here, conceding this point. Cool.
Okay, so the score and the scorers, the scorer of the two... Oh.
Well, it was 2-1 to Watford. Danny Welbeck scored.
Okay. Yeah. Could you name Watford's scorers?
No.
Igalo scored one. I can't remember.
Oh, Igalo. What do you mean, Igalo? Of course not. I actually do remember that.
Okay, so the two debut scorers.
Cadona?
Yeah.
Giroud?
Nope.
Podolski? Yeah. Doesn't matter anyway. I've won this week.
Yeah, you have. Okay, three of five Arsenal players.
Yeah, I had no clue. I couldn't think of anything, so I've gone for some random names just to spice this episode up a bit.
Okay.
We go Baptista. What? Was he actually one?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Flamini?
No.
No, okay. It would have been really strange if I got all three.
Yeah.
And Ray Parler?
No.
No.
He took more than one penalty, mate.
Yeah, I know, but we spoke about him earlier, so I thought he'd go.
Lee Dixon, Paul Merson, Theo Walcott, Baptista, Rosicky.
Walcott's only scored...
Yeah.
I was actually thinking Rosicky, and I actually thought Paul Merson as well.
Yeah.
But Baptista, that's good.
Yeah.
So that rounds up our quiz for this section of games.
And we're going to go to Nando's off this, so I'll buy you some chips.
Oh, that's nice of you. I think I won this section 7-6.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so time for this week's PL roundup, and we've actually just watched West Ham beat Liverpool to keep our Invincibles record intact.
Massive.
Intact is yours gold.
Is it gold? No, it isn't.
No, it's not gold. I'll tell you that for a bag of chips.
Cool, blimey. I'm happy with that. Very happy with that. Very pleased for West Ham.
Yeah, and we're two off Liverpool now.
We're two off Liverpool, three off West Ham and City, six off Chelsea. I mean, nobody thought we'd be six off first place in November.
No.
I mean, this is ridiculous. Not that we're looking for first place with the state of our squad right now.
No, but you'd
always get excited, don't you?
You also, you know, if we finish the season 6 points off the top, you'd imagine that we might be somewhere in and around the top four.
Well, exactly, and also that some big players might come next season.
Yeah.
Might be what it takes to convince them.
But do we have this weekend? So the early kick-off was United got trounced by City.
Actually, we were talking earlier, Man City completed the most amount of passes in any Premier League game in history since Opta Records started. But it would have been...
their rival stadium.
That's irrelevant. It would have been in history. At Old Trafford.
Ridiculous.
They were amazing. It was like a death by a thousand cuts compared to Liverpool, who just went for the jugular.
City just trounced them. And then at 3 o'clock, what did we have? We had...
I saw Burnley's goal. I turned on the second half of that Chelsea game. They nicked a point away. Yeah. That's really good.
Chelsea
blown the title race
as well.
The title race and the top four race has been blown wide open this weekend.
But also, we were saying that Chelsea have really only played the relegation candidates quite recently.
In the last sort of month, they've only played bottom three or four in the league and Malmo in the Champions League.
Yeah, so, you know, dropping points to Burnley isn't ideal for them.
No, it isn't.
Norwich won their first game of the season and then sacked their manager.
Yeah, they don't do wins, do they?
No, we don't do that here. And then Crystal Palace are flying.
They are flying. Well, 3 wins all season's not flying.
But, no, I know, but they played 8 of the top 10.
Yeah, yeah, they're doing well and they're on a really good path, I think.
And I think they play good football as well.
Sure, yeah.
And I like Patrick, obviously.
Obviously.
Brighton, Newcastle, 1-0. Lewis Dunk went in goal for a bit.
Yeah, saw that.
Funny. But apart from that, it was a
kept more clean sheets
game,
than
to be fair.
Than the big goalkeepers this weekend.
Yeah, big time. And then today we beat Watford 1-0 and then Everton 0, Spurs 0. I haven't seen any of highlights.
I mean, two pretty crap teams.
Yeah, just
got it written all over it.
Mid-table clash.
I looked at the possession stats and some of the stats for Leeds, Leicester. It seemed like Leeds actually had a lot more of the ball.
Yeah.
But both two quite exciting teams. Yeah. The draw's decent for us.
And then, Harvey Barnes just equalised straight after Rafinha scored, and that was it for that game.
What an incredible game at the London Stadium. West Ham are flying.
Yeah. We
watched the first half.
We didn't get to watch the second half.
And then we didn't watch the second half.
Because
so,
we were here recording.
So we watched the highlights of the second half, but the first half wasn't that impressive from West Ham. It was nick a really strange early goal.
Yeah, and they just
then defend. And then Alexander Arnold scored a peach of a free kick.
Oh, he's such a good player.
Postage stamp. It was such lovely dippage on it.
Are there any games on Monday?
Actually, your dad was saying to me with the Alexander Arnold free kick that West Ham's wall was really high apart from Jared Bowen. So by doing the little 2-yard pass to Salah and back, shifted the wall so that Alexander Arnold
was
whipping
really
over
clever.
Bowen. Really clever
usually
analysis.
I think those are pointless.
Yeah.
But then when you think about it like that,
it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. No Monday games this week. The FA Cup, though, got Dagenham and Redbridge versus Salford on Monday, if you're interested
in
that.
Grassroots football. I mean, that's not grassroots football, but lower league footballs. It's good to watch sometimes.
Yeah. And then we've got another international break.
But we're going into this international break on really good form and after a series of really good results for us.
Yeah.
This weekend. Again, it's happening. Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Left on Red podcast. We'll try and bring you an international break special and come up with a different format.
Let's try and get that. Maybe I'll see if my dad wants to come on or
something
like that.
In the meantime, we'd like to thank Lathy and Serge for our partnership with the Gooner fanzine. Go follow them on all social media accounts.
Yeah.
Watch their YouTube channel. We're going to be doing some work with them.
Yeah, and hopefully there'll be some clips from the podcast up on there quite soon.
So. They do some really good articles, so we'll put a link in the description below.
Yeah.
And go buy one.
Sweet.
Take care, guys.